Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
And now,
it's time for
Inside Conan, an important Hollywood podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to Inside Conan.
I'm Mike Sweeney, a writer at The Conan Show, and I'm joined by Jesse Gaskell.
Yes, also a writer at The Conan Show. We've got so much good stuff to talk to you about today.
Yes, we have a great guest, and we all got a bit carried away.
I was really fanning out over this one because I love him. Louis Anderson.
Louis Anderson's hilarious. You probably know him most recently from Baskets. He's in the latest season of Search Party.
Yeah, I know. He actually didn't mention that in the interview.
No, so we're mentioning it now.
He's very humble.
Too modest. I'm gobbling down Search Party like candy.
I love that show.
I love it too. And he's very funny in it.
Yeah, that show has the perfect intersection for me of like sort of true crime and comedy.
Yes. They don't go for the laugh every single
moment. No, they
don't. It's dark.
Yeah, it is. No, the tone is really, it's cool. It's really different. Yeah. And I can't wait for all of you to hear Louis. We talked to him about a lot of stuff. He was at his home in Vegas. And here's Louis.
I'm so happy to be here.
We're so happy you could be here.
My hair is a doll hair now. I've got doll hair, if you know anything about dolls. My mom used to collect dolls, and their hair, as they got older, would tuft up. And I've got doll teeth, if you notice.
It's hard to see.
But you do have that porcelain skin, too.
Wait, your mother collected dolls?
She was an antique collector. Okay. She collected everything. Yeah. She loved, look at this doll, Louis.
Old dolls.
Isn't that gorgeous, Louis? I have a whole bit about it in my special, Big Underwear, on the CW.
Wow, we already worked a plug in. Yeah, that was fast.
But I mean, it's the first time I did the doll bit, which is about where I stayed at somebody's house.
Yeah.
And they put me in the doll room.
Oh, no.
There were 100 dolls in there.
You counted them.
That looked just like me.
That must have been comforting.
So, Louis, your late night debut, you did stand up on Johnny Carson in 1984.
November 20th, 1984.
Oh, wow. You remember.
Everybody remembers their first late night
thing.
You got
the tattoo. I think
of your stand-up. I think you do. It was a hard thing for me to get. That didn't come easy for me.
How did you get to L.A. already, or...?
Yeah, I was living here. I auditioned for 2 years. It's kind of a weird story, but I'll tell it to you. So the guy who booked it didn't think, kept saying to me, "You're not Carson material," which infuriated me. I just kept auditioning. And then the Letterman people saw me when I was somewhere, and they booked me. And then when they booked me, the next day the Tonight Show called and said, "Hey, we want you on." And...
It's like dating.
It really is.
It's worse than dating, though, because I love both people. Of course, David Letterman, I love. So I did it, and the Letterman people didn't have me on then for 2 or 3 years. 2 years, I think. And I apologize. I said, David, you know, even you would have made that decision when the Tonight Show was your number one thing in your life.
Right.
And so he saw that, and then he had me on. You know, but I always thought that was all, I guess, destiny. Don't you think something like that's destiny? When you want something for that long, when you watch The Tonight Show with your dad, who was a musician who watched Doc Severinsen. Mm-hmm. And so when you sat in that, for me, that house in the projects on Hazelwood and thought you're going to be on that show someday, maybe. Mm-hmm. And then you got on it. You know, you knew the curtain you were going to stand behind. You were so familiar with the show.
Right.
You knew what that curtain looked like. And that was a huge night for me. I went from earlier that week, I had applied at the AM/PM mini market for a job
because
I couldn't pay my rent. So the day I got the Tonight Show, I also got the call from the mini market.
They said, we heard about the Tonight Show.
No, yeah, yeah. We heard about the Letterman. Yeah, so we never want to hear from you again.
They all came crawling.
Yeah. And that's a really good, yeah. And I said, listen, I appreciate it, but I'm doing the Tonight Show tonight. He goes, yeah, right. And then
they all say
I'm
that.
I'm not giving you off.
Yeah. And then the next day he called me and said, you were great. If you ever want a job, you just come and see me. And
oh, nice.
Good luck. A great fallback position.
Yeah. Good luck with your career. But, stop by for a 2-for-1 burger anytime. Of course I did.
I love you mentioning that curtain. When you were finally behind the curtain, did it feel, for the first time on The Tonight Show, were you relaxed about it? Like, oh, it's this curtain. I'm on the other side. Or was it all of a sudden like, oh, Jesus.
Oh, God, what have I done?
No, I was so prepared.
Right.
Yeah.
I had 9 Tonight Shows prepared when I did The Tonight Show. I had already 9 sets that I was going to do.
Oh, wow.
For The Tonight Show. I was very, very prepared. And I remember reaching out and touching that curtain.
Yeah.
Feel it.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to know. My mom would ask me, I knew that. What's that curtain?
What's
made
it made out of?
Is it chintz? Is it chintz? She'd say, if you know what that is. Right. But everything on a television set looks expensive, but is meant to throw away.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, it's cheap.
It's
cheap. It has to look good. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but I was behind that curtain. I remember they call you when the last guest finishes and they go, come on, let's go. And you go down this hallway and it's really like the backstage at Conan. You walk through this maze. Mm-hmm. I'm back there and I hear Johnny tapping actually his pencil on the desk, even though the band was blaring. I could hear that. Huh. Because his mic was live already to introduce me. And he said, a kid making his national television debut, Louis Anderson. And I walked out, looked for my mark, and delivered my first line and finished. And I left to go back to the dressing room. And people said, Johnny wants you back. Get back out there.
Wow.
And that was, I go, where, why? So I'm fake running. When you're fat, that's what you do. I'm running. You just move your arms. I'm going. And I got out there. I took a bow. The crowd went crazy. I was looked over at Johnny and he got up and he shook my hand. And I have that picture. That's a really big thing for me.
Wow.
That was a giant acknowledgement. He goes, I would have had you, I had to have you sit down, he said, but we're running late. But, you know, you were great. And then afterwards, he came by my room. You know, he always had bodyguards, so people didn't realize that. And he goes, great set, Louis. Great set. Because people don't realize Johnny was, you know, got death threats every night.
Yeah, I did not realize.
People, yeah. Like that movie, King of Comedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They wanted him to play the part because they tried to kidnap him once, I heard.
Oh, wow.
I don't know if it's true, but it's a good story. And he didn't want to, I guess, reinforce that by doing that kind of thing. But they had the right people do the movie because it was a fabulous movie.
Yeah.
You
know?
Yeah.
Ma! Doing this, I'm sorry, Liza.
I heard that movie still holds up. Like people
still
just saw it for
up.
The first time.
Yeah,
recently.
Yeah.
They're oh, that movie's great.
That's a beautiful movie. In fact, The Joker is very.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Similar,
similar, yeah.
Similar-ish. That's all. But you know, everything's an homage, isn't it? I mean, I'm out there at the Tonight Show my first time doing Jack Benny, Bob Hope, Jonathan Winters, Richard Pryor, all these people. Jackie Vernon, all these people, you know, Marty Allen, these are all people who I saw and said, well, this is, if they could be on it, you know, Bob Hope had a huge influence on my comedy. And so did Jack Benny. And so did Johnny Carson, really.
Uh-huh. Also, you mentioned when you were a kid watching that show, like, when did you start having that dream that, hey, you know what? Someday I'm going to be on that show.
I never had the dream of being on the show. Okay. I thought about it, you know, like in that way of like, what would I do on there? You know, just silly like that.
Right.
And then one time I was at a club in 1978 that they had a comedy night and they had comedians. I go, these guys are terrible, aren't they, to my friend? Yeah. And he goes, you think you're funnier? I go, I think I might be.
Right.
And he said, well, why don't you try it if you think you're so funny? And I said, I will. And I signed up for the next week, October 10th, 1978. Had all my friends down. My mom and dad were there, my sister and brother. And
Wow. You invited everyone for your first time?
Wow.
Yeah, my only time. Confident. That was just a dare. It was just a, it wasn't like, that didn't necessarily mean I was going to be a comedian because right. I tried it, you know? And then I felt so comfortable up there and did so good. And of course, because I had all my supporters there, I just went, oh, this is cool. This is good. I'm going to try this again. And then 42 years later, here we are.
Here we are.
And then that Tonight Show, I don't mean to go on about it, but this was how significant the Tonight Show was. The next day, I was opening at the Comedy Store at the Dunes Hotel with, you know, Jim Carrey and Blake Clark and Harry Basil. And I think even, I don't know if Roseanne was on that show, but it was five or six of us. And then the week after, I was opening at Bally's for the Commodores.
Oh, wow.
And cool. I had an NBC holding deal. And my whole life changed. My whole life changed. And
back then, you would hear, just because the Tonight Show was the 11:30 show, the next day you're just recognized everywhere you go, and, and millions of people would have seen you.
I guess it was like two of three TV sets, something like that. They have all these statistics, but it was like that. And it was a really wonderful thing. And it's one of those things where you go, that was a perfect setup. And you realize I've been working on those jokes since 1978.
Right.
Yeah.
That I did in 84. Those jokes were ready.
Right.
To go. There was no way I was going to mess those jokes up.
Right, right.
And then I did an ad lib from Johnny's monologue.
Oh, that's great.
Because I said, this will really piss off the guy who, Jim McCauley, who booked me.
Right.
who's a talent coordinator.
Right. Did he say something bad afterwards?
He said, you did a joke. You can't do those. I go, it worked though, didn't it? And he goes, yeah, but geez, don't ever do that again. And every Tonight Show I did a joke he didn't approve.
Did he ever cop
never
to the fact that he booked you the day after Letterman's?
Never.
Oh, wow.
But then, you know, could he really?
No. And he didn't have to.
If you could cop, I'm the person to cop to.
Right.
Because I'm not going to beat you up about it.
Right. Right, right, right. I'm
going to forgive you. I'm going to forgive you.
Yeah, of course.
You know, he's no longer with us, so it's, you know, I'm not going to give him a hard time. But he didn't just do it to me. He did it to probably hundreds of comics, to be honest with you. You know, those people get those jobs, you know.
From his point of view, he's probably was, you know, nervous about someone going on and in any way, you know, displeasing Johnny Carson. So he might have been second-guessing himself a lot.
I don't think he liked fat people. You hardly ever saw any fat comics on there.
On Carson?
Then I did it. And then there were fat comics.
Huh.
Listen, I was talking about butter.
Right.
You know, my jokes were not the type of jokes that probably everybody was doing. I don't think. I never felt like I was competing with other comics. I thought I was just doing my thing.
Which is great. When you said you had like eight Tonight Show sets ready, is that because you were trying different sets out on Jim McCauley?
No, I said I'm going to do all these sets on the Tonight Show.
Okay.
And I did six, I think, the first year.
Wow.
No, I'm prepared. I've always believed, I always try to tell comics, you can't be too prepared to become famous.
Yeah, because when you get the opportunity, you have to have the material to back it up. I think a lot of people with writing too, you think, oh, I'll wait until I get asked to do this and then I'm going to write something great. But you can't wait for that.
I always say, like, what are you doing? What's your material all about?
Right.
What are you thinking?
Why are you doing this?
Well, where is it coming from? And does it mean anything to you? Because if it doesn't mean anything to you, it's not going to mean anything to me.
Right.
You know? But it took me a long time to figure those words out.
That's a big lesson to learn, I think, especially just starting out. You're just like being able to get up on stage and do it is a big learning curve.
Yeah. a lot of times you're doing an impression of your idol,
right,
on some level,
right,
or the people who influenced you,
right,
which can take you down the wrong road, mm-hmm, because you might not have any of the instincts that your idol has,
right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you could see in comics who they were influenced by. You know, I could anyways. And I always say, just get down into your stuff, because mm-hmm, it's a bottomless pit. You can just keep pulling stuff up from there.
Yeah, it's like therapy.
I've seen comics.
Exactly, Jess.
I've seen comics get influenced by other super strong comics who are working at the same club over a long period of time. Like, you come back a few months later and like, oh my gosh, they're starting to kind of imitate subconsciously or consciously. You know?
And sometimes they become famous. I won't point them out.
No.
But they become. But you know, you can. There's two or three you can point out.
Yeah.
You know, who Carlin influenced, who Dennis Miller influenced, who, you know, Conan, who Johnny. You know, all these people who you see a lot. People will try to influence, you know.
Bill Hicks was a comedian I saw a lot. And he moved to New York for a few years. 6 months after he was there, half the comics were picking up little subtle markers of his.
Hicks.
But he was
devotees, right?
And I think a lot of it was subconscious because he was so kind of overpowering in a way in terms of...
I don't think comics pick it up on purpose.
Exactly.
I don't think, you know, because I have found myself going, that sounds like someone else's bit. And you just, because your ego will just say, just do it.
Right.
Doesn't matter whose it is. Your ego will definitely say that to you because you think you've invented it because you know, comics are egomaniacal.
Right.
Aren't they? I mean, I don't know. A comic is not egomaniacal.
Yeah, they're all very self-absorbed in a way.
Yeah.
But I think some, like, especially...
I'm
like
absorbent.
absorbent.
I know. I
extra
just wanted
strength.
To make... Yeah. Like, I just feel like I...
Right.
That's it.
But like on our show in the writer's room, a lot of times, sometimes writers will be like, oh, you know what? This idea came to me too quickly. It just kind of came like a lightning bolt. They almost got suspicious that, oh, did I think of this on my own?
But sometimes it is just that that was the idea that no one had said yet.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
That was the one.
Yep.
Well, writing room is almost just a big like cloud of intoxication, you know, that people have to get out of to get some, catch their breath.
Right.
And find kind of like a touchstone. They need a touchstone to get, Jesus, I get out of there. I was becoming so insecure, you know?
I had to pretend I had to go to the bathroom.
Right.
I know you created some shows. Did you spend time a lot in the writer's room or were you kind of away from that?
In Life with Louie, I would come in and say, what about this? Uh-huh. Louis's dad is a prick. no, but Louis and his dad don't get along because of this, or Louis's mom does this, or Louis's grandma died and he was supposed to write her a thank you note for a sweater and she died before and he doesn't know where to send the note.
Right.
So then they would go with that. And then I remember I was always in the bathtub reading the scripts they would do. I don't know why I ended up there, but I ended up in the bathtub.
That's a nice ritual.
There was something. I love a bathtub. You're either a bath person or you're not, you know.
Yeah.
That's tough when you're absorbent, but.
So I would do that. And then I would call someone during it. This is wrong. This is right. This is wrong. This is right. In the nicest way. You got to realize I wasn't, you know, I was just saying, what about this and add this and that. I'm really good. That's my best strength is add-ons. Like I've tried to write scripts, but you know, I was never a very good student and the computer is, you know, like elusive to me and I could write it and then go, where
it's
is
it? Hard to
that
use in the bathtub.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like I wrote my last book in my memo section.
Oh,
that's impressive. You know,
Doers, mowing season is here. With Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
How did you used to come up with material when you were starting out in stand-up? Would you take a notepad?
I would just get fat jokes. I did these, like I had a little pad, you know, or something. Probably just, like a pad. And I'd write Fat Olympics, right? I'd write butter. I'd write dad, gun. I always did fat jokes. And then one day a guy was doing... was there with his father in the front row, and I always talked to the crowd. I always would work the crowd. And I go, hey, look, is that your dad? He goes, yeah. He goes, looks like you guys get along. He goes, yeah, we really do. I go, not my dad. Although he never hit us, he just carried a gun. And then they laughed, and I go, oh, they laughed at that. I go, he never shot us. He just go. And that resonated a different laugh than I can't stay long. I'm in between meals. So... even though that one covered the whole gambit, I can't stay long, I'm in between meals.
Right.
That covered a whole gambit of the audience. The other one, that was a self-depreciating joke, but the father joke, or my mom loved butter, you know, first words out of her mouth at the restaurant, could we get some extra butter? And the maitre d' would go, well, let us seat your party first. Right? So... that was a difference in jokes, in response. Fat joke, I knew what response I was going to get. And it was strong. It was killer. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But the other jokes, the reservoir, they became Life with Louis. Mm-hmm. They became my books. Mm-hmm. They became the pilots I made. They became Christine Baskets. Mm-hmm. That well has served me well.
Yes, it's a deeper, deeper. And so it
probably because, more relatable for everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I didn't know other people had screwed up families when I, you know,
right.
You don't
right.
grow up knowing that how screwed up someone's families are. You don't really see it.
Yeah.
Because everybody puts on this.
White people are good at hiding.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, they put on the outside family face.
And you grew up in Minnesota, right? Where I imagine it's even more, possibly more extreme. Don't talk about it. How long have you lived in Las Vegas?
I guess now 13, coming up on 13 years. Oh, I had shows here for like 10 years on the Strip-ish.
Oh, wow.
And one downtown and one at the PAL and 6 years at the Catch a Rising Star showroom in the, in the Excalibur. So.
Oh, wow. What is that like? How many shows a week would you have to do?
5 or 6.
Okay.
But you know, it's just like what you do. It's the same thing. It's a very similar thing. If you're working in a writer's room and you're doing a show,
right.
there's a, you know, like, okay, well, It's like if you were doing the finished product every night, you're going to shoot a show.
Right.
The only thing is that there is an audience there for me, the same. And there are no cameras. That's the only difference.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, and it, you know, it wears on you. Like, you know, it's a Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Because Tuesday nights, actually Mondays and Tuesdays were like my favorite nights because somehow they were the brighter crowds.
Oh,
Wednesday,
yeah.
Wednesday was good. Thursday, real conservative group of people. I don't know who they were, but very conservative.
Oh, always there for NRA convention. Or
Friday, nightmare. You know, Fridays.
Yes, Fridays. Everyone's
let's go see a show after we worked all week.
Yep. And let's get to drink at five.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then Saturday, easy money.
Because
mm-hmm. you know,
they're all drunk.
And early Saturday.
They're your biggest, you know, they're like, they are not going to be denied a good time.
Right. They're in a good
mood. They're with you. They're with you. Yes. Yeah, they're with you.
They're
Saturdays, ready, yeah. they worked all week to go out Saturday night, and they're rooting for
yeah.
you. So it does wear on you because you have to make, you know, like I just try to do new stuff all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I just said, you got to do new stuff or else you're just going to be the worst comedian in the world.
Right. That's hard, though.
Then you're just an actor.
Yeah.
That's a big discipline to be, you know, to go, okay, I'm not going to coast. And I'm guessing Vegas is a hard place. Maybe you tell me, I have no idea, to try out new material. Certainly not on the Wednesday crowds.
I mean, I used to do it on the Tonight Show. So if it's...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right.
I used to say, you have to... I go, why aren't you trying out? Right. They go, I want to do some new stuff, but I want to do it on an open mic. I go, no, do it on your most important show. Find out if it's really in there. They'll be with you on it.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, hey, I wanted to try this new stuff and it doesn't work. Go, well, I'll never do that again. You know, the audience is for you. And they want to be a part of your process, believe it or not.
Right.
When Conan screws up, that could be even better than anything's expected.
Yes.
It usually is.
Yeah.
And that's
and the, so, yeah. it's so real.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if you ad-lib your way out of it, yes, it's usually a bigger laugh than what you were going to do anyway. And it's much more memorable.
I'm working on doing an album, Christine Baskett's album.
Oh, that's a
oh
great
my
idea.
God.
Yeah. On the A side is Christine. On the B side is me.
Oh,
I love that.
Because I've been watching Baskets again on Hulu. Because I never watched it while I was making it. There's
right.
something
oh, really?
About... Not really. Because that can just... I didn't want to get in my head
you
about
would get
the
in your
character.
Head, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know? You know, I'm pleasantly surprised and horrified at the same time because that's just the human nature of a comic, don't you think?
Right. Yeah, sure.
Why did I let them shoot like that?
Why'd they use that take? I did three other better takes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
well, Jonathan, you know, he was just the greatest guy to work with.
Yeah.
Because he just, he's just pure love.
Did they approach you about playing Christine or was that kind of your idea?
Oh, no. I got a call from Louis CK, and he said, Louis, I go, hi, Louis. And because you hardly ever hear Louis as a name
right.
calling you.
Yeah.
And he goes, I'm doing a sitcom with Zach Galifianakis. I wonder if you'd play a character for us. I go, yeah. And he goes, we want you to play his mother. I go, yes. I knew right away that would, this was like a.
Perfect.
This was something bigger than like, I go, this is good when comics who are really popular from another era lean on you to do something. This is big. You know what I mean? Like this is big. Here are people who they would not necessarily.
It means you're
be in my
status.
Wheelhouse.
Right,
yeah,
right.
They wouldn't be in my wheelhouse, but I bring them something that they don't have. You know, and that they want to remember or that. But it worked out perfect, obviously. But I remember going to Silmar at 5:30 in the morning. It was all hush hush because nobody knew that I was playing the mom.
Oh, wow.
And I picked out the clothes that I thought my mom and sister would wear. The wig was too small, so they had to cut it. And I had one scene and it was all with all the Costco stuff with Martha and Zach. And that was it. And I just went to Jonathan right before we shot it. And I go, hey, I'm not going to change my voice. I'm not going to cartoon this up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to change who I am to play this character.
Right.
Then we shot this scene and I had this thing where I tried to drink down a whole thing of Kirkland. Right? That those bottles of things they sell. Yeah. And I said, oh my God, I'm not going to make it. And I did a spit take. I knew instinctively to save that. I go, oh, that hit the spot, or that was refreshing, something like that.
Yeah.
It was so good. It was really true to the character. And then I just talked kind of like my mom would talk about Kirkland products and how much my son Chip disappointed me. And you know how parents shame their kids in front of their friends?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he went to school in France, clown school in France. You know how much that costs? I had to pay in euros, so I'm not sure, but there was a lot of euros in that number. And I just had fun, and Jonathan was so great to us. And
what? Was there a lot of improvising? Laugh.
Yeah, you can. Yes, yeah. There was tons of it. I opened my heart wide as could be and dismissed Louis Anderson as quickly as possible. I said, you got to get out of here. There can't be, this cannot be any kind of corny, silly. It has to be real.
Right.
This has to be as real as you've ever been. And this is not a man. You know, people say, oh, you're a man playing a woman. I go, I'm a woman.
Right.
I'm not a man playing a woman. I know that sounds weird. I told people to call me Christine, Louis. I just wanted to be, I knew I was doing something special, at least for me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You're digging deep.
I dug so deep that, you know, this is how the book was started. I came home one day from the set, still emotional for him. And I said, oh, was my mom ever as happy as Christine? You know? Mm-hmm. And I started writing her this letter, and which became, you know, the essence of the book. But 2 days later, somehow somebody sent a photo of my mom or posted it from the family of her as a young girl. She was like a teenager, early 20s, it's on my Instagram, and Christine is on the other side. And my mom was so happy. Mm. So I knew that at some point she was really happy.
Yeah.
It was just such a weird thing. And probably, you know, I am always looking for signs and everything.
Sure. It was probably like having a dialogue with her doing this part, right? Where you kind of felt like you were having an ongoing, it was almost a way to still stay connected to her and have this ongoing relationship in a way.
And I think, you know, what you're saying is, and as soon as I opened that question up, was my mom ever as happy as me? It opened up a reservoir of questions I had for my mom.
Right.
And that changed everything. In fact, my book, Hey Mom, which is a book that I think people sometimes give to their mom, I always tell them, well, you should write your letter to your mom when you give them that book, or just write a letter to your mom and send it or put it in a drawer, whatever you want, but get that letter out. Everybody's got a letter to their mom or not, even if she's not, but yes, why she's still alive. Cause you could become friends with your mom. I always tell people, if you could become friends with your mom, which I wish I would have done more. I was friends with her, but not like I should have been. I wish I could have got by my stupidness. Is that a word? But it says no anyway.
Sure.
It's just like stubborn, stupid, you know, stupidness. Right. And if I could have got through that, what would I have discovered? And could we have become friends? And could both of our lives been completely enriched?
Right.
From that experience. Now, that all sounds silly and simple and everything, but it's really important. If this pandemic has taught us one thing, it's what's important.
Yeah,
the important stuff. Yes, it's good to wash your clothes and to do the dishes and be nice to yourself and all that. But wait a minute. What are the things you always wanted to do? So I said to myself, I'm going to do that album. I'm going to learn how to sing a little. I'm going to do the stuff that I want to do. I'm going to learn how to paint. I started painting once and I'm going to go back to that. We rob ourselves from the TV and from the phone and, you know, from the podcast. We rob ourselves. But it's true. We do.
You should be painting right now.
No. Yeah. But podcasts have given me so much joy and comfort during this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
this pandemic that
no, but I think you're right that it's really cleared the dead weight off of my consciousness, because there was a lot of stuff that was on my to-do list that just immediately seemed so frivolous. It was like, I don't have to get this stuff done.
We're living out a pathology that was set a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And this gives us this pandemic, I think. You know, last night was a good example. I said, you are the luckiest guy in the world, and you got to stop worrying about anything, and you got to reach out to people who you love and who you care about, but you're mad at. Mm-hmm. And so I've done that for the most part. Oh. And that was a really, really big thing for me. I've been working on it, but it's a really big, last night I called a few people and just said, hey, I'm really sorry. I'm such a jerk sometimes. And they go, and
were
sometimes
they
they said, what are you talking about? Right. A couple of them. Right. I go, well, I thought I was.
It was all in your head. Yeah.
No, I don't think it was, but you know, that's
a wrong number.
That's a common, that's a common response, isn't it?
Sure.
Where you, they let you off the hook, but they shouldn't. I didn't want to get let off the hook. I wanted to say, this is what I think I did.
Right.
And I'm sorry I did that. Mm-hmm. And it's part of my nature. My dad was a prick, and I can be a prick sometimes.
Right. I come from a long line of pricks. Yes.
It's hard, though, because it doesn't mean that I'm going to be their friend anymore than I was. So it doesn't mean that that's going to blossom. Because comics, you know, we're all people in show business are self-centered from what I can tell.
Comics are bad.
Comics are bad. Comics are the
worst. Narcissists in the way that it doesn't mean that you think you're great. It means that you're
think we're great. No, but I get what
you
mean.
Some people hate themselves too, but they're still
a lot of self-loathing. Yeah.
The self-loathing I try to get out of the way near bedtime so I can't sleep.
And the self-loathing is tied in with the worrying, and it all that keeps you from being, like you're saying, be present in the moment and realize, like you're saying, how lucky you are and all the great things that you tend to go, oh, well, that doesn't count. None of that counts. And it does.
So you brought up something. So self-loathing, like I wish I would have been nicer to my mom in certain circumstances. Mm-hmm. I couldn't. I didn't have what it took or didn't want to. And I got to own that. So self-loathing, you got to own. It's not real. It's just a time in your life when you made stupid decisions or made mistakes or hurt somebody or did something. You've got to clear that slate. You know, resentment and all those kind of things, they weigh so much, like a ton. Mm. You know, resentment, that will eat its own container.
Ooh, that's bad acid.
But you can take this thing that you did, or I wasn't nice to my mom. Okay, here it is. I'm sorry, Mom. I just was stupid. I was inconsiderate. And it is no reflection about how much you mean to me. I love you. I hope you can forgive me. Done. I mean, done in some sense. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to do that. It's silly. I'm talking to a decaf cappuccino. I can't even get a real cappuccino because I won't go. Yeah.
Because you're afraid.
I won't sleep. Yeah. Because I won't sleep. And then that's simplifying it.
Right.
I don't mean to simplify it, but I really want to make a point. The torture that we do for ourselves has to be undone.
Yeah. We're actually, we have to wrap up with you, Louis.
I have to deal with loss again. You know, losses are
big.
You
have your
deal.
Coffee cup.
I do.
That's right.
But I've had a really wonderful time.
This is
great. Thank you for being so open with us.
Yes.
It's been a really great conversation.
So my piece of advice is that you're perfect. Everyone's perfect.
Okay.
It's who they are. Just try to, you know, not torture yourself about the things that you'd like to change.
It's a waste of time.
And why do you want to change them?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They must be okay. All right.
Great.
Love you guys.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm leaving now.
Bye.
Bye.
So that was Louis Anderson. You can see him on this season of Baskets and Search Party.
Yeah, you can see him on Search Party, currently streaming on HBO Max.
You know what else is streaming on HBO Max? Conan Without Borders.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Just I'd throw that in there.
Hey, we have a fan question. It says, hi, Mike and Jesse. I would really like to know about Carl Oldie Olsen and how he became a reoccurring character on Late Night. Love, Ray. Thank you, Ray. Carl Olde Olsen, he would appear in sketches, I guess, the mid-90s. His nickname kind of tells it all. He was
was he old?
Oh, boy. One of the original writers on the show, Michael Gordon, I think, they were doing a sketch. It was a little league team, like a kid's little league team versus a senior citizen's little league team. It might have been during the Major League Baseball strike, kind of filling the void, I think. And Michael Gordon auditioned a lot of senior citizen actors to play baseball. And he showed me his note, he had notes, meticulous notes next to all of them. And
can be tricky with senior actors.
Tricky. Some of them.
Seniors and kids.
Oh, yes. And animals.
And animals.
He had notes like, you know, too hammy, too big, or, you know, too quiet. And next, he showed me his note next to Carl Olde Olsen. It just was like really, really old. So he was cast immediately. And
how old do you think he was?
You know what?
68.
I think it was sort of like that, but he looked much, much older, and he had long white hair, and he had a long white beard. So he looked like he was just beamed in.
Yeah, like Gandalf.
Yes, he was kind of Gandalf's more emaciated older brother. We started doing Halloween big sketches where he'd play like a vampire. And then another time he played Frankenstein. And they were these giant, elaborate sketches built on. But he had background as a Shakespearean actor, which we didn't even know. Yeah, we learned.
Oh, so he was probably really slumming it.
Yeah, exactly. And we thought we were doing this guy a favor, you know, like, hey, we're putting you on a show at 1 a.m. He was also in Waterworld. And, you know, who's going to know if I'm lying? No one's seen that. So you just have to accept that he was above Kevin Costner.
Don't look it up. Wow.
Back then, people were obsessed with Carl Olde Olsen. He was kind of one of the big...
Yeah, recurring players. Characters. Yeah. And I love when a writer will fixate on an actor like that, and it becomes their muse almost.
Yes, yes, yes. Anyway, that's our show for the week.
That's our show. But we'll be back next week with more great content. is that vague enough? You can email us insideconanpod@gmail.com.
Or you can leave a voicemail at 323-209-5303.
Or you can just call and breathe heavily.
Yes.
For a few minutes. So stay safe out there.
Yes.
Bye. We like you. Inside Conan, an Important Hollywood Podcast, is hosted by Mike Sweeney and me, Jesse Gaskell.
Produced by Jen Samples.
Engineered and mixed by Will Becton.
Supervising producers are Kevin Bartelt and Aaron Blair.
Executive produced by Adam Sachs and Jeff Ross at Team Coco.
And Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf.
Thanks to Jimmy Vivino for our theme music and interstitials.
You can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts.
And of course, please subscribe and tell a friend to listen to Inside Conan on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or whatever platform you like best.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Doers, mowing season is here with Spring Black Friday Savings at the Home Depot. Right now, you can get gas-like power with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower for just $329. With a runtime of nearly an hour, it's the perfect mower to tackle your half-acre lawn without a trip to the gas station. Just push and mow. Your grass won't wait, so buy it online and pick it up in-store to get out there sooner. Get gas-like power this spring with the Ryobi 40-volt push mower, just $329, during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.